Good morning and welcome to the October 20th Economic Development and Freight Advisory Committee meeting. We'll start with a welcome. Thank you for being here, for coming today. Appreciate your time. And let's do some introductions. I'm Pamela Bernard. I'm the chairwoman and also senior transportation engineer for Chatham County. And I'll just start with Michelle over here on my left.
Michelle Strickland, City of Savannah Traffic Engineering.
Thank you.
Jesse Dillon, Savannah Economic Development Authority.
And who do we have on online or on the phone, please?
Hello, this is Nick Fazio. I'm in part of the MPC, just listening in.
Great, thanks. Who else?
Hi, this is Joe Longo, Community Planner with Federal Highways, just listening in as well.
Great, thanks. Anyone else? Anyone from the airport? All right, well, we'll move on. Let's start with approval of the agenda. Does anyone have anything that they want to add or have any questions about the agenda? If not, at this time, I will entertain a motion to approve the agenda.
Move to approve the agenda.
Second.
Thank you. All in favor, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Motion passes. Moving on to approval of the 23 meeting calendar. And if I'm not mistaken, it looked like there was only, is there only one scheduled so far for EDFAC?
At EDFAC committee meetings, we actually two meetings.
Okay.
One is in February and one is in June.
June.
Yeah. Okay. So June would be the final deliverables. And the
oh, okay. I see it.
Yeah. If we need to schedule more meetings later and we can add it to the calendar, but so far we actually have the consultants booked for those two meetings.
Okay. 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 Great. Just one other question, Wakota. What about voting for the chairperson position? Is that, do we do that each year for this one?
We have to check the bylaws.
Okay.
Yeah. We have to check
curious.
The bylaws. Yeah.
This is the last one for this year. I just wondered.
Yeah, so if we need to do the election, we will do it at the February meeting. So we will check the bylaws.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you. So does anyone have any questions about the meeting calendar? If not, at this time, I'll entertain a motion to approve the calendar.
Move to approve the calendar for fiscal year 2023. Michelle Strickland.
Second, Jesse Dillon.
Thank you. All in favor? Aye.
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 Any opposed? Motion passes. Moving on to other business. Do we have any other business?
Minutes.
Oh, the minutes. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Okay. I'm skipping right ahead.
Okay.
So the meeting minutes. Yes, I did read those actually. Did anyone have any questions about the or discussion about the meeting minutes from last time? That was from the June 16th meeting. Okay. If not, then at this time, I will make a motion to approve the June 16th meeting minutes.
Second, Michelle Strickland.
All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay. Motion passes. All right. So we covered all the action items then. Okay. Sorry about that. Okay. So then moving to the other, do we have any other business right now? Not. Okay. So we go to the status reports, and the first one is the MTP update. Would that be you, Wakota? Thank you.
The MTP updates, we kicked off on September the 1st, and we are going through different neighborhoods and giving presentations, also holding public meetings. I think for this committee, we just encourage everybody to take the survey. Probably because today we're going to focus on the presentation on the freight plan. So we're not going to present a lot of information except the public survey part. So I think Sally and Aisha probably will provide you with more information on that.
Good morning, Sally Helm.
Well, I'll just keep it quick. Asia has the survey part to talk about, to pull up, you know, pull up the presentation. And I'll just go over my part is like the public engagement and public outreach. So I just wanted to hit some highlights real quick, just to kind of let you know what we're going on with the public outreach part. So we've, in our first round of meetings, we've hit between 20 and 30 different locations of neighborhood meetings, city councils, different agencies that we're hitting as we still have meetings going into November. So we're trying to hit every community that we can. The girls have been working round the clock to present and to go out. We have developed, and I do want to say Nick is not in here at this meeting, but Nick Fazio has been a vital, vital part of helping us set up. He helped edit with our presentation you're going to see here with the social media outreach. We have a fantastic Instagram and Facebook page. Please go on and like us. And it has reached several. We have close to, and we've set it up, which may not sound like a lot of numbers, but we have close to 100 followers already on Instagram in less than 30 days. Facebook has reached over 3,300 people. We've had several shares. Lots of interaction with other public agencies that we've had. CAT has been great, the city of Savannah, Chatham County. We've been featured in the local news with WTOC with our MTP outreach. CAT social media has been in interaction with helping with share. The city of Savannah has posted us on their website, Chatham County. We've been featured in Pooler's community website page, the Savannah Agenda. We were featured in that as well. Port Wentworth has featured us on their social media. So there's a lot of interaction with all the other community, the surrounding communities. Nick also put together and developed a QR code for us to make it easier. And what we're looking at, when we see that, modern technology now, a lot of people like to just scan. We're finding the higher spikes with our QR code comes from our younger kids. Wycota went out yesterday to Savannah Arts and did a great presentation. And we had a huge spike in our QR code hits there. We're reaching and looking with the survey that Asia is going to go over shortly and let you know, we are looking at those numbers actively as we go through this. And in that, we're looking at the gaps in our community and with our economic. So in those, some of those gaps that we're seeing after looking at the participation, we have found gaps in the younger age, which Wycota hit really good yesterday. We are going to Hall Park to do a festival there. We have things to hit the younger kids. And then while Nick developed some really cute coloring pages, 2050 coloring pages I can show you, these are really cute to draw the kids in. And then therefore we can reach the parents while the kids are you know, interacting with the color pages and to teach them a little bit about transportation, sidewalks, things like that. And then get the parents to take the survey real quick. But we're going to hit there. We're going to go with 100% Savannah, which is this Saturday is the Hall Park. Next Saturday is the city of Savannah is doing 100% Savannah. So we'll participate there. Wycota went out, last week and hit the CAT Connect. So we're trying to hit every community, connect everybody that we can. Asia has scheduled time with Life, which is with the senior citizens and with the disabled. So we'll hit that community because we found a gap in that area of community. We've hit several of our lower income for our EJ community. So we're trying to get everybody involved, connect everybody to get everybody's opinion to help everyone. So I just wanted to show you that and tell you how we're going with there. Please go in and look. It's super easy to hit that QR code and take the surveys. I know some of you have because we've saturated your emails with it. But please, please, because we're going to extend the survey deadline through November since we're hitting, it's reaching more and more people and to give everybody a true opportunity to participate in this. So I'll turn it over to Asia. These three pages, I just want to show you real quick, is just the public outreach. There's just a couple pictures on some of the, we have lots of them that we haven't downloaded yet, and we'll show you on our final report of some more. This one right here, I think, was at the First African Baptist Church, I believe, some of these pictures, you know, were some interactions there. Here's some of our Instagram, the news highlights that we've hit. These are just real quick, just some of our public engagements. This was in a brochure, a newsletter that was sent out with some of our October meetings on there. Our September looked like that. And this is not all of our October. So just to let you know, our team has worked diligently around the clock on the weekends and the evenings. Most of these meetings are in the evening. So the team has done fantastic pulling this together.
Thank you for that, Sally. I'm going to move on to the public survey. So just to give a short introduction, we opened it on the 1st of September. And on the slide, it says we have 349 responses, but as of today, we have 371. The survey is available in four languages, and the survey topics include roadways, bicycles, pedestrians, public transit, equity, and resilience, just to name a few of the topics that were on the survey. So while we know that getting a perfectly representative sample of an area is pretty much impossible, we still want the survey and plan to be the voice of the Savannah area. And so we want it to be as representative as possible. So I just want to go into some of the who has been taking the survey and then some of the more interesting responses that we've gotten. I won't go through every single survey question, but just some of the things that we found interesting so far. So these are the zip codes that have had the most input or the highest amount of respondents. First place is 31405. And if you don't see your zip code up here, definitely share the word about the survey. Maybe you can join the top three list. So in terms of who has been taking the survey, the vast majority of people who have taken it drive a personal vehicle, which is not necessarily a surprise as most people in the area do have their own personal vehicle. But the Savannah area is one of those places that has a higher number of people that walk and bike. So we would like to get the input from them up higher. We also want to receive input from all groups of people within the Savannah area. As you can see, the majority of the people who have taken the survey are white. And we just want to drive, increase the amount of other racial groups that take the survey, just because we know the Savannah area is a pretty diverse area. In terms of age groups, we're seeing that people that are middle-aged are mostly taking the survey, not really getting a whole lot of younger people taking it. But as discussed earlier, Wycota did go to a high school recently, and we did get some input from high school students, which I thought was really cool because, again, this plan is a 20-year plan, and it will impact them in their future. So they deserve a say, and they actually have to have a say in their future. And then in terms of household income, it's typically higher income people who have taken this survey. And those who make a lower income haven't taken the survey as much. I know the Savannah area does have a high poverty rate. And so we would like to see more people who make a lower income take the survey. So just on to some of the survey highlights. Again, October 31st was the soft deadline, but we really want to get an input from more people. And the survey is starting to spread more, so we thought it was better to extend that deadline into November. So this survey response wasn't necessarily a surprise, but it was, I thought it was necessary to share because it was one that a lot of people found important. So in general, respondents want to maintain and repair our roadways, road infrastructure, and facilities. Oh, and just to describe the survey, we essentially asked people to pick their top three most important transportation goals and objectives, and repairing roadways had a tendency to be among some of the top priorities among people. And this is just showing it's pretty far ahead of like some of the other survey results or survey responses, but improving access to all modes of transportation was pretty high up there. And then also increasing the efficiency and reliability of our transportation network was also a pretty important objective to survey respondents. So I thought this one was interesting. although the majority of people that have taken the survey do drive their own car, there's still significant interest in a local rail service and public transportation. So this is just showing where they stack up compared to some of the other roadway objectives. They're in second and third place. But given the fact that the vast majority of people here drive, I thought it was interesting that people still want to invest in more public transportation in the area. Another interesting response was that most respondents wanted bike lanes that were protected by a barrier and greenways that support multiple modes of non-motorized transportation. So we've seen a lot of the bikeways in the area that are on the street, and they're usually painted green, but it seems that most people want some type of barrier to protect them from motor vehicle traffic. And this is just showing the result. 67% of respondents felt that this resilience objective was important, and that was to increase green and nature-based infrastructure in transportation projects to reduce flooding and heat stress and improve the health of the environment. And 74% of respondents prioritize this equity objective, and it is to identify and target high-need population areas where transit investment is prioritized. And that's just the end of some of the survey results I wanted to share. Again, these are just preliminary results. They may change in the future, but we're seeing some interesting things so far. Despite the fact that most people are car drivers, there's still interest in other forms of transportation, which I think is interesting and should absolutely be included in our plan update. And that's the end of this presentation.
Thank you. Appreciate that, both of you guys. Very good.
And I'm terribly impressed at your social media outreach. I'm definitely not as savvy as y'all are. And y'all have put in so much work to not only your social media, but to your outreach, and kudos. That's terribly impressive.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. I know we've gotten the emails before, but certainly send them again. I'll see if I can do another push through CETA.
I appreciate that. We'll do that. Nick's been vital in getting that outreach as far as it has too. So
I appreciate that. Thank you.
That sounds like you guys put in some serious hours. So appreciate it.
Okay. So then I guess if we want to move on to the next item, then that is the MPO Regional Freight Transportation Plan update. Thank you.
Do I need to, Julie, stop share over here and open that file? Okay, try to stop share and then. Show on the screen. Is it showing? Share the screen.
Need to.
You see the screen? Okay. Great. So Chris will give the presentation. Chris from Cambridge Systematics.
All right. Thank you. Good morning, everyone. Thank you for being here in person and online as well. My name is Chris Lindsay. I'm with Cambridge Systematics. We are the consultant team that is helping the MPO to update its regional freight plan. We are joined in person this morning with Symbiosity. Denise is here as well. And online, our other teaming partner, AECOM, Carlos is online as well. So I've already done the introduction, so I will just kind of get into the purpose of today's meeting. Just generally, we wanted to provide everyone an update on where we stand with the regional freight plan. Right now, the tasks that we are primarily working on are the needs assessment, stakeholder outreach, and a few other key technical tasks. So we wanted to share with you all what we have so far, get some feedback on the draft results, the findings that we're seeing so far. Oh, okay.
Sorry, we're fixing it. They can't see virtually.
Okay. Great. Hopefully everyone online can see it now. My apologies for that. So just share with you some where we stand on the freight plan and just to kind of outline what our next tasks are, next steps and remaining tasks. So just to remind everyone of a kind of a overview of what's all included in the regional freight plan. So the task we're working on now is a freight needs assessment and analysis that's looking at travel time data, commodity flow data, lots of other information to really get an idea of where those challenges exist on the system and how we can inform those needs. It also includes tasks for land use, understanding where freight-oriented land uses exist now and where we think they might exist in the future. That's going to be very important for planning out and prioritizing investments. Economic development and market assessment, getting an idea of what type of industries, freight-intensive industries, that is, ones that really depend on trucking and rail, how they have evolved in the region over time and where we see that headed. Environment and equity analysis, understanding how those have freight impacts and it's impacted by the broader environment. And finally, getting into those recommendations, both infrastructure recommendations, but also land use. So that's just kind of a brief overview of all those key technical tasks and where we're headed with this. So the needs assessment is really broken down into a number of key subtasks. The first three that you see on the top of the line are the ones that I'm going to focus on a little bit more in detail this morning. The remaining ones, when we come back in February, we want to give more of an update on that, as well as some of those other technical tasks. So this really covers a profile of the region's freight assets, some of the data that we've collected on truck parking, as well as truck and freight restrictions that are across the region, and also some of the initial work that we've been looking at from a resiliency perspective. So the freight profiles and assessment. This part is essentially just taking an inventory of the freight assets in the region. Of course, critically important, the Port of Savannah and the Savannah River, really providing that international waterborne connection to your top trading partners. Various airports in the region, though the Savannah Hilton-Head International Airport is the primary one that's serving cargo. Taking inventory of the roadway system, over 8,700 miles of highways connecting multimodal and intermodal facilities, as well as the rail network. Nearly 279 miles of rail, 2 class 1 carriers, 7 class 3 railroads, as well as a number of rail freight terminals, intermodal terminals, which are exchanging containers with trucks in the port, as well as a number of transload and more bulk commodity terminals as well. The map that you see towards the side of the screen is showing the National Highway Freight Network. This is the primary network at the federal level that is considered kind of most essential for moving goods on a national basis. So you see the main interstate highways through the region covered on that network, I-16 and I-95, as well as I-516. But you also see some of the local corridors as well, like State Route 21, portions of State Route 25 as well, and many of those kind of last mile intermodal connectors that connect into the Port of Savannah and serve that facility. I think that it's also important to identify those elements of the freight network that are essential to military freight as well. Several corridors in the region are on the StriNet and the StrikeNet. Those are the highway and the rail sides of the military freight network that's considered essential for deploying resources and troops. Again, as you can see, the interstate highways included on there, but also many of those corridors that provide access to Fort Stewart and Hunter Army Airfield. And also, it's not quite depicted on this slide, but it is important to point out that the Port of Savannah is considered a strategic seaport, meaning that it too is considered essential for deploying military resources. ITS, so Intelligent Transportation System Assets. One of the things we wanted to account for in our inventory are the various ITS assets that are included across the region. This includes closed circuit television cameras, dynamic message signs, classification count stations, weigh in motion stations, as well as environmental sensor stations. These are important because they provide a means by which you can manage traffic and improve operations beyond just simply adding capacity. And so you can see in the table that's included here, we don't depict all of these assets on the map here because it'll get a little bit busy, but you have over 77 CCTV cameras that are deployed throughout the region, providing visibility to some of the highest traffic corridors, and about 7 dynamic message signs. Most of those are included, are located rather, on I-95 and portions of US 80 and State Route 204, not as many on I-16, but I think that there are some considerations for how that network could potentially be expanded for purposes of improving traffic conditions throughout the region. But this gives you an idea of what ITS assets are out there and where those gaps are and which you can potentially expand the system to help out with managing freight traffic. Another thing that we looked at on the highway side are bridges and culverts. Here we're focusing on bridges, 311 bridges throughout the three county region, focusing in on Effingham, Bryant, and Chatham. The vast majority of those are in good to fair condition. Only 2 bridges are considered to be in poor condition. Both of those are located on State Route 25, crossing the Savannah River and the Middle River. But both of those have current GDOT projects to replace them. So those will soon, be classified in that good category. So overall, the region's bridges are in pretty good condition. And we look at this because it's important from a freight perspective, because if you have a bridge that's posted for load or a bridge that's in poor condition, it can result in freight having to reroute and essentially increasing the miles traveled and contributing to congestion. So we don't want that, so we want to make sure that we kind of account for bridge conditions. We also looked at pavement conditions throughout the region. With the map and the table, you can see that most of the region's pavements are considered to be in good to fair condition, but where you do see kind of a concentration of poor pavements, that's primarily on the major collectors and the minor arterials. So those are some of the routes that are really providing that kind of last mile connectivity into a lot of warehousing developments and freight terminals and other things that trucks might be using. Not as much data on local roadways, but you can see that, again, there's those lower functional class systems as opposed to the interstates and principal arterials. That's where you're really seeing the pavement challenges. I'll pause for a second in case there are any questions or comments. Well, that's the highest traffic part of the region. You're going to have those challenges where you see more vehicles. So definitely in the urban core of the region, you're going to see those pavement challenges. So another thing on the highway side we looked at was truck travel time reliability. So TTTR, truck travel time reliability, that is the performance measure adopted at the federal level that is reported for interstate highways. Essentially, it gives an idea of how reliable or how consistent travel times are on the interstate highway system. So a low value indicates very reliable travel time. A high value indicates less reliable travel time. So we looked at that data. This is 2021 data, travel time data from the made available through NRITS. And we kind of broke it down by corridors, looking at I-16, 95, and 516. We also broke it down by time periods. And you can see that a lot of those challenges are really concentrated on portions of I-16 and I-516, especially as they kind of enter the core of the region, or in I-516's case, it kind of dead ends into Rand Avenue. So you start to see those challenges there more so. On 16, you really start to see less reliable truck travel times as you get a little bit closer to I-95. So essentially where Pooler Parkway intersects I-16 on into downtown, that's where you start to see those less reliable travel times, kind of indicated by that orangish color on the map. On I-95, you start to see those challenges more so as you approach South Carolina. You do have a lane drop in 95 as you cross the border. So that is undoubtedly contributing to the performance challenges that you're seeing on that corridor.
What was the time period for this collection?
This is 2021 data.
So this is, I mean, all the construction that you're seeing on 516 and 16 is a huge impact for that, I would imagine.
That would be a huge impact for that too, yes.
Thank you.
One thing that we thought that was interesting was this, is that when you look at it across different time periods, you really see that midday period being a little bit worse travel conditions for trucks as opposed to the AM and PM. Well, really, as opposed to the AMP. Some of that is probably a little bit self-selection of truckers. When they're operating during business hours. So, you know, they're going to be concentrated in the midday a little bit more. And to some degree, they're probably trying to avoid, you know, rush hour, peak hour conditions as well. Also on the highway side, we looked at some safety data. So this is truck involved crashes from 2016 to 2020. Over 3,700 truck involved crashes. That's about 6.5% of all crashes in the three county region over that time period. About 2% of those crashes resulted in a serious injury or fatality, as opposed to about 1.2% for all other crashes. Some of that is essentially just the nature of trucks. You have a heavier vehicle. If you have a crash, the potential to have a severe outcome is going to be higher than for other vehicles. So that's part of the reason why you see that higher share of serious injury and fatal crashes. But one thing that we're going to do with this data is also link it to the roadway network to get an idea of what those rates look like on a corridor basis, and compare it to what we see for similar roadways out at the statewide level to get a better idea of which corridors specifically we should be targeting. So that was quite a bit of information on the highway side. That's, you know, of course, a very important mode for the freight perspective is carrying the bulk of traffic throughout the region. But I want to turn our attention to some of the other freight modes as well, but I'll pause for a second just in case there are any questions or comments in the room or online based off of what you've seen so far. Okay, so as I mentioned earlier in the presentation, two class one railroads operating in the region, CSX and Norfolk Southern, but also a number of class three railroads.
Question, yes. What's the difference between a class three and a class one, please?
Oh, yes, please. So class one railroads are essentially your larger carriers. They are moving freight nationally. And in the case of companies like Canadian National, they internationally as well for those that have operating rights into Canada and Mexico. So they're moving freight, you know, from Georgia to California, just across the country. Class three railroads are smaller carriers, and they are really making those last mile connections into the port, into industrial parts, into other rail served customers. So essentially, they are taking that traffic from the mainline operators and making sure that it gets to its final destination, which will be the shippers and the receivers that are in the region. So one thing that we're doing as part of our stakeholder outreach is reaching out to railroads to get a better idea of what some of their challenges are and how they see the needs of the region. So that's in process, but there is quite a bit of information that we pulled from recent statewide plans. And one thing that I thought was important to call out is that most of the carriers in the region have track that is capable of carrying 286K rail cars. These are the standard weight of rail cars. When you start to see lines that don't have that capacity, it creates operating challenges. For the most part, that does not seem to be an issue in the region, except for potentially on the Ogeechee Railroad Company line, but that's some information that we want to verify as part of our outreach as well. So one aspect of rail operations that really impacts a broader community are at-grade crossings. There are hundreds of at-grade crossings throughout the Savannah region, especially given the port, given the number of industrial parks and warehousing developments. And these are important to look at because they're essentially conflict points between the rail and other roadway users, whether that be vehicles or pedestrians or bicyclists. And they really create challenges in terms of delays, in terms of emissions as trucks or other vehicles idle at those crossings as they're waiting for trains to pass. And again, on the safety side, because it's a potential conflict point, you can have collisions. So there are 192 crossings throughout the region. And we pulled some safety data for the rail system in general. So this bar plot here shows train incidents, highway rail incidents, and other incidents. Train incidents are collisions with other trains, derailments, really issues that are more so on the operator side, as well as other incidents. Those are really kind of employee work related injuries, trespasser incidents. So again, things that are a little bit more on the railroad side, but also included in this are highway rail incidents. And you can see from here that there haven't been any serious or fatal injury highway rail incidents since about 2016, but the number of incidents has been pretty consistent over this time frame. This data is going back to 2012 all the way to 2021. So one thing that we're doing as part of our safety analysis is honing in on those crossings where you have seen those incidents and making sure that we account for ones where maybe you see multiple incidents. That way we can get an idea of where those safety improvements need to be made. On the air cargo side, this one will be brief because there is only one airport that serves freight in the region. That's the Savannah Hilton Head International Airport. About 138,000 square feet of air cargo warehouse space at the airport. Since about 2010, it averages about 8,000 tons of cargo on an annual basis, looking at cargo operations. And then, of course, on the marine side, the Savannah River and the Port of Savannah, again, a critically important freight asset to the region and to the state, the largest and fastest growing container terminal in the nation, third busiest container port complex in the nation, and really the largest gateway for agricultural exports as well. So one thing that we looked at with the port was to just pull some information that was made available through Bureau of Transportation Statistics. They have a port freight performance program where they look at some kind of critical performance measures to gauge how well ports are performing. You can see that since about 2011, the throughput at the Port of Savannah has steadily increased, and we know that that trend is just going to continue as the port adds capacity and as Savannah in Georgia grows as a consumer hub for many of the goods that are brought into the port, as well as a production hub for the various manufacturing clusters and logistics clusters that have set up around the port. The chart on the bottom shows vessel dwell times. That's essentially the amount of time that a vessel spends in a port, and that's kind of a major contributing factor to throughput and for performance. And what I wanted to highlight with this is that you can see that the Port of Savannah, it regularly beats the national average for large container ports for vessel dwell times for all types of cargo that are handled at the port. So whether it be containers, roll-on, roll-off, tankers as well, it consistently has lower dwell times, indicating that it's a very efficient port, more efficient than its competitors. And the last thing on the marine side is we want to account for that there is a lot of plant capacity investments at the port, ship to shore cranes, the Garden City Terminal West expansion, Berth 1 improvements, Hutchinson Island. There's a lot going on at the port that's going to even drive those performance measures that we saw on the earlier side and allow it to handle more cargo. And so that's going to be important for planning out some of the infrastructure investments that we hope to identify as part of this freight plan that we're working on here. So I'll pause for a second there. I hit everyone for a lot of information, I know. But from here, this was kind of our summary of what we put together and where we stand so far on the freight profiles and assessment. The next two items I want to move on to are some of the information we collected for truck parking and also some of the resiliency work that is in process now. So one thing that we were tasked with doing as part of this needs assessment is taking an inventory of truck parking. So trucks need to park both for overnight and for short-term breaks for a number of reasons. Truck parking and rest periods is mandated at the federal level through Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration. So drivers need facilities where they can safely pull off the road, where they can not be fatigued, not be in danger of anything else. And so that's really become an important issue to look at as part of regional and statewide freight planning. And it's something that we want to account for in our plan. So you can see that there are over 1,100 truck parking spaces throughout the region. The vast majority of those are concentrated in Bryan and Chatham counties. One thing that we thought was interesting was that though Chatham has many more facilities, you can actually see that most of the capacity in terms of actual number of spaces is actually in Bryan County. So that's really indicating that the facilities there are very large, essentially. And given the spate of development in terms of freight intensive industries, whether it be manufacturing, warehousing, logistics, given the growth that's at the port, the need for truck parking so drivers have those safe spaces is only going to increase as we move forward. Another thing we looked at as part of this are local regulations impacting freight. Essentially, the purpose of this was to understand some of the local ordinances, regulations that might have an impact on freight mobility. And part of it just kind of helps understand where there are issues, where there are challenges. So we went through the city and county codes for the various municipalities in the region. And you can see that most of the cities and counties have some type of laws, some type of regulations that govern where trucks can park, that have ordinances regarding trains stopping at crossings. Bryan County and Richmond Hill have some more extensive language in their development codes for how truck parking can be developed. Again, these are things that are going to influence how freight moves throughout the region over the long term, and also on the land use side, how some of these industries are developed and oriented across the region. So that's one thing that we're accounting for in this. That's all I have on the truck parking and freight restrictions side. If there are no questions or comments, I'm going to move on to resiliency.
I just want to mention that all of the deliverables are online. And then for the freight parking, one of my comments was that we need to know what the freight parking needs are. So I think, Chris, they are developing that information as well so that we know what available and what is needed. So where else we need to make investments.
That's right. And one thing that is kind of feeding that analysis, essentially looking at how traffic growth is, you know, predicted to evolve over some of these corridors. So we can see, well, which corridors perhaps don't have any facilities and to understand where those needs can be at over the long term. Okay, so another thing that's interesting on the needs assessment side that we're looking at, and this will be the last one before we move on to stakeholder outreach, is resiliency. So one thing we were tasked with doing was identifying 2 to 3 relevant hazards for the region that could have an impact on freight. So the three that we arrived at are sea level rise / coastal flooding, more inland flooding, riverine flooding, we'll refer to it as well as hurricanes. So in addition to these, we're also looking at resiliency of supply chains, but I thought that these were interesting to draw out for purposes of today's discussion. So essentially what we're doing with this, we're trying to understand what is the risk of the region for these hazards and to understand the vulnerability and the criticality of the various freight assets for those hazards. And you can see how this analysis is evolving with the slides that we have here. So for sea level rise and coastal flooding, this figure at the top, it shows U.S. Army Corps of Engineers forecast for sea level rise around Georgia through 2050. Over a foot, about a foot and a quarter of sea level rise is projected over the long term. And so if you take this information and look at the map that's on the right-hand side, this information is coming from NOAA as well, which is showing kind of sea level rise exposure for the coast. So the parts that are red are essentially showing the parts of the region that could be inundated by 1 foot or less of sea level rise. So the parts of the region that are, of course, closer to the coast that are more east are, you know, essentially at higher risk for sea level rise or coastal flooding than some of the portions that are more inland, more to the west of the region. This map that we're showing here comes from FEMA. It shows flood hazard zone data for the region. The dark purple showing parts of the region that are in 100-year floodplains, the lighter blue areas that have what they would call minimal risk of flooding. And so we're looking at this and looking at notable flood events throughout Georgia, throughout the region, again, to pick out those parts of the region that might be at risk for flooding and understand how that can impact freight assets. And on the hurricane side, you can see that much of the region, pretty all of the region is, of course, exposed to hurricanes. This map here is showing wind gust speeds that have been experienced over a 50-year time frame throughout various portions of the county. Again, just given the coastal location, there is some risk of hurricanes. And so we're taking these three hazards and we want to understand, okay, well, what does that mean for freight? What does that mean for our assets? And so the way that we're doing that is FEMA has compiled a national risk assessment where they are looking at essentially risk for various hazards at the national level. We take that data and we rescaled it for Georgia to be Georgia specific. And specifically, we're looking at the expected annual loss. This is the average economic loss in dollars resulting from natural hazards each year. And that's coming from that FEMA database. So we take that information, we rescale it for Georgia, and we use it to create a composite risk assessment across census tracts for the three county region. And when you look at kind of the results of that analysis, these two maps show where those draft results look like now. So the darker, more maroon color are showing that across the three hazards, these are the parts of the region that are more exposed to those hazards or have some greater risk based off of historical events and historical losses that have occurred from those hazards. And we take the freight assets in terms of the highways, the rails, and we link it back. And you can see with this map that we're able to essentially kind of score each segment of the network to, you know, across this to say, well, this is a higher risk asset. This is a less risky asset based off of that data. So we're using that to understand which assets are most vulnerable, which assets are most critical, and that can inform some of the recommendations that come later. Okay, so that is where we stand with the needs assessment. Some of the ongoing tasks that we have now, looking at future freight growth, we have commodity flow data for the region. So we're understanding in terms of commodities transported by truck, by rail, what they look like for a base year, also what that looks like for a future year. And we're also doing some work on kind of network congestion, bottlenecks, understanding where those challenges are at with the region as well. So that's where we stand on the needs assessment side. The last thing that we'll do, and I'll ask Denise for some help here as well, is just to update you all on where we stand with stakeholder outreach. Any questions so far? All right. So outreach consists of surveys directed at the general public, as well as those that are more focused on freight stakeholders. So that would be shippers, warehouse operators, trucking companies. In addition to that, we're conducting one-on-one interviews with interested stakeholders as well. From those interviews, some common themes that have emerged where we're asking about essentially what are the challenges of the region? What should those priorities be? What are some of the things that we might not be seeing in the data that we need to be aware of? Freight-oriented growth along I-16 and also east of downtown, that's where a lot of the growth in the region is headed. So investments need to be focused on handling issues with some of those areas. Greater need for east-west connectivity, both across the northern half of Effingham County, but also into that large industrial area that's east of downtown. We've been hearing a lot of information as far as like land use conflicts, as a lot of warehouses have developed towards the northern part of the region and the western part of the region. You have some areas that were formerly rural that are now seeing a lot of that development. So making sure that we account for that in our land use assessment and having some recommendations around it is, you know, has been conveyed to us as something that's very important to do as well. Oh, and this map here that you see, we also have an online map where people can go in and drop pins to show where they see challenges are with region. So this is a work in progress. As we get more feedback and more results, we're constantly updating this map and the following figures that you're seeing here as well. Denise, did you want to say anything about outreach so far? So some of the results that we're seeing, kind of the biggest priorities for the region, as well as which freight improvements you would like to see, these are results that are coming from the public side. So safety and security, as well as accessibility and mobility, are kind of the top two that are emerging. So when you kind of dig into these responses, essentially people are telling us that there are problematic intersections or corridors where you've seen crashes, or perhaps trucks are in places where they shouldn't be. So having some recommendations around handling those challenges are important. As well as on the accessibility and mobility side, these responses were essentially saying that there are operational improvements, capacity improvements that need to be made to handle some of the truck traffic and rail traffic that we've seen. And those were kind of some of the biggest priorities from the public side. When we get into the freight stakeholder responses that we've received so far, most of these have come from respondents that identify as being in the warehousing and logistics sector. When we ask how well does the freight transportation system meet your needs, the majority respondents so far said well. And we broke that down a little bit further, asking about the adequacy of multimodal connections. You can see that it kind of varies across what respondents kind of use. So some don't use pipelines at all. So they responded, I don't know about that. That's not something that I use. But when you look at like port rail connections, highway rail connections, you can see that many of those are shown that they perform good to fair based off of freight stakeholder feedback. When we ask about the most pressing challenges for highway and for rail, you can see that congestion and mobility towards the bottom of the screen emerging as kind of like a very urgent issue, less so on the truck parking side, roadway safety and crashes as well. Those are really kind of the top two so far as what they see are kind of the most pressing needs on the rail, on the on the highway freight side and similar challenges on the rail side centered around accessibility and mobility, getting access to that system. We asked about trends and disruptions, essentially what current trends will have a lasting impact on the region. Also asking about what things disrupt your business. So on the trend side, I would say it's probably no surprise that most respondents view e-commerce as being a lasting trend that impacts freight operations and how they specifically operate within the region. And when we asked about things that disrupt their business, you know, whether, you know, flooding events that emerged as kind of one of the big issues that came up, as well as just traffic incidents. So hazards kind of on the natural side, but also on the kind of man-made side, when you would say that safety as well kind of emerged as some of the ones that are that we're seeing in the data as being kind of disruptions that we should account for. And lastly, we asked them about what are their priorities? Where should we be focusing our investments? Similar to the public side, the top two that emerged, safety and security, accessibility and mobility. So improving the safety of the network, improving capacity, improving operations are where they think that the focus should be based off of the information we've gotten so far. So that is our update of the things that we have been up to. We have lots more planned, as you can see here. So our next steps really are going to be we're scheduled to report back in February. So at that point, we will have kind of the needs assessment wrapped up and we can kind of have more of a summary of what we've seen out of that analysis so far. We'll also have more information on the land use side and the economic development side as those tasks have just begun as well. So when we report back in November, we can give more information on essentially where these analyses kind of finally landed once we've had a chance to gather more data, refine the data, hear more feedback from our stakeholders and start moving into that identifying recommendations and phase of the project. So that's all that I have this morning. Happy to answer any questions.
I don't have any questions, but that was an excellent report. Thank you. Very informative. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right. I guess we can move on. The next item is the information reports. I was looking at the county list of projects. The only ones that might be interesting for freight would be the I-16 at Jim DeLoach Parkway. Well, I think it's important to say that Jim DeLoach Parkway should be open now, right? I haven't driven it yet. Has anybody driven the new Jim DeLoach Parkway phase two? Well, it's supposed to be open. So that's good news, especially for the trucking industry, I'm sure. So the I-16 at Jim DeLoach Parkway interchange, that is getting towards the end of concept. So hopefully we can get the concept report approved by GDOT and move into preliminary design on that. It's still a few years away from construction, but it is moving forward. So that's good. And Little Neck reconstruction project, that one, we're in the middle of right-of-way acquisition on that. So we're making good progress on that as well. And that's about it, I think, on the county projects. How about you? You got anything?
We're continuing to work on Project Orion.
Anything you want? Is there anyone online that wants to do an update on any projects? Okay. Do we have anyone here that wants to do public comment? Okay. Notices, the next Economic Development and Advisory Committee meeting will be February 16th, 2023 at 10 a.m. What else you got, Waikana?
I just want to mention the website. So if you just come over here, the presentation is over here. And then the draft deliverables are already posted. And I also want to, I would like to thank Jesse for forwarding us all that contact information so that we can conduct the survey. And then when you read the draft deliverables, actually, I was very, very impressed. So we are very glad to select Cambridge Systematics to do this study.
Good. Excellent.
Yeah, if you have any comments on any of these draft deliverables, please send us on. So we'll have a forward to Chris for incorporation. Thank you.
Thank you to everybody that presented today. It was great. Very informative.
And with that, we are adjourned. Thank you.